Welcome to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz. Dr. Teplitz is an attorney and he has a PhD in holistic health sciences. He is a pioneer in stress management and wellness. He has written 8 books and his 2 latest are Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change, and the number 1 Amazon bestseller, Switched on Selling, Balance Your Brain for Sales Success. And now, here's Dr. Jerry Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. My name is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you're listening to WebTalkRadio.net. In this show, we're going to be looking at the force of habits and the power that making a promise and keeping it can have in creating healthy alternatives for yourself. The reason we want to look at healthy alternatives today is because we've got situations going on with the FDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the whole notion of genetic engineering of crops and genetically modifying crops. We've got a situation with Monsanto. Monsanto is one of the leading companies in developing seeds that are genetically engineered. What that means is, as an example, that they can withstand putting their herbicide Roundup onto the crop without harming the crop, but it kills all of the weeds and things like that. The problem is, there hasn't been a lot of testing on all of this and looking at the long-term impacts on humans and animals. And now there's some court action that has occurred on this. In August, a court prohibited any future planting and sale of sugar beets until the USDA completed a study that complied with what they called relevant law. They've gone further in looking at this, and what they found is, for example, beet farmers who are planting sugar beets that are genetically modified, that those genetically modified plants can actually, through their pollen, travel far and wide and mix into other plants and situations that are not having genetically modified organisms as part of them. So that recently a state agency found Ready Roundup canola growing in the state's roads and ditches and soybean fields because of this contamination. You even get superweeds developing that, in effect, the herbicide Roundup Ready can't even kill. And there are about, I believe, 7 different super weed-resistant plants that have evolved out of this whole concept. There's also another element going on, and that is the effect on birth rates and fertility rates. And with some research that was done using hamsters, they found by the 3rd generation that almost all of the GM soy-eating hamsters were sterile. What's that going to do to humans? How are we going to be impacted on that? Nobody even knows. Yet this goes on every day because there is a revolving door in Washington where you've got, for example, a Monsanto attorney and VP who is now in charge of U.S. food safety in the USDA. And so you've got situations that are absurd that are affecting all of us. If you'd like to look at how you can plan for buying non-GMO shopping tips, because in this country, products are not labeled that they have GMO genetically modified organisms in them. In Europe it is, but not here. So you can go to a website, non-GMOshoppingguide.com. That's non-GMOshoppingguide.com. Now, if you'd like to know more about me, you can click on the globe on this page or go to teplitz.com, and you can follow me on Twitter or Facebook. What I'd like to talk about in this section is healthy breakthroughs, breakthrough alternatives for you. And one of them is the placebo effect. It used to be medical doctors thought the placebo was just in your mind. It was psychological. Now more and more research is coming out finding it is actually physical changes happening in the brain when you give somebody a placebo pill. The first instance of a placebo happening occurred in World War II. There was an army nurse assisting an anesthetist named Henry Beecher who was treating U.S. troops while they were under heavy German bombardment. The morphine supply ran out, and the nurse told a wounded soldier that he was getting a shot of morphine, though her syringe only contained salt water. Amazingly, this quote-unquote bogus injection relieved soldiers' agony and prevented the onset of shock. One of the things that researchers have found, the conviction of your doctor becomes very important in the placebo effect, and this is giving somebody a sugar pill. If your doctor says, this is really going to cure you, then the placebo rate is actually higher. They've looked at different ways that pills can be impacted by placebo. So the researchers actually found if you give somebody four pills, it's a stronger placebo effect than if you give them two pills. If you give people a yellow pill, it becomes the most effective antidepressant. If you give somebody a red fake stimulant pill, it works better than a blue fake stimulant pill. The researchers have been doing MRIs and finding when you give somebody a placebo, you're actually getting immediate changes in the brain patterns and in parts of the brain you're having an immediate release of pain-reducing chemicals being released in the brain. So we're going to talk more about the placebo effect in the next show and go into more detail of understanding how it actually works and how you can use it to assist you to reach healthy alternatives. Before I bring on my guest, I'd like to tell you about a book that I have done called Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. And this book is a powerful approach to your handling your stress with the times that we're under. There was a review written about the book in Amazon. And you can read this for yourself, but I'm going to read it to you, part of it. It came from Tammy Brady, the Whole Health Therapist. She said, managing your stress in difficult times is a valuable resource. The book looks at long-term lifestyle changes, such as using meditation to quiet the mind and reflect on the important things in life, as well as how to better nourish your body, mind, and spirit. It also includes some quick little things you can do to relieve stress and reduce its adverse effects. I personally found the section on shiatsu extremely useful. The author sets out specific pressure points to relieve pain and relax tense muscles. It's an extremely easy process, but only in a few minutes. Tough headaches and tight neck muscles are gone without any drugs or ill effects. If you'd like to look at ordering the Managing Your Stress book, on the page you're on now, you'll see the image of the book. Just click there, and you'll be able to order it. So I'd like to welcome my guest today, Matthew Casalotto. Matthew is an accomplished author. He's a speaker. He's a CEO-level speechwriter, and he's a coach. He spent over 8 years on Capitol Hill working as a speechwriter and special assistant to Speaker of the House of Representatives, Jim Wright. And he was a legislative assistant to Congressman Leon Panetta, who is now CIA director. He's done CEO-level speechwriting for organizations such as Verizon, Pepsi-Cola, MCI. This year, Matthew launched the first annual Make a Promise Day, and he's now working on a new book, The Power of Making a Promise, with a foreword by Jack Canfield, who's co-author of Chicken Soup for the Soul book series. He's also done a book on Habit Force, How to Kick the Habit of Failure and Adopt the Habits of Success. Matthew, welcome to Healthy Alternatives.
Hey, Jerry. Great to be here. Thank you.
So I have a question, because we want to look in this show at, in effect, that notion of the power of promise and what that means. How did you get into looking at the notion of a power of promise in the first place?
Well, it's an interesting question, and it's a great story. It really is a personal story, and I'll share it with you briefly and your listeners. It turns out, Jerry, that I made a promise to my mother on her deathbed that I would finish writing a book that she and I had been talking about, and she unfortunately got really sick with cancer, and before she passed away, I decided I'm going to make a promise to her that I'll finish writing this book and dedicate it to her memory. And of course, you know, we both knew that she wasn't going to survive to see this. It was a sad event, tragic, but also she was really delighted that I had made this promise to her. I didn't really know about the power of making a promise at that moment. I just made a promise, and I realized later, and we can talk about it, this whole topic of the power of making promises dawned on me later after I made that promise.
How much later was it? What was the book about? Was it about making promises, or what was that first book about?
Well, yeah, the book, actually, you mentioned it, Habit Force. The idea for the book was about the habits of failure and success, and I basically had this kind of a crazy idea that there are seven letters in the word failure and also seven letters in the word success. So I had this idea of creating two acronyms so people could actually more easily remember and put to, you know, rapid use these this knowledge of these habits of failure and success through a mnemonic device of these two acronyms. So that's what I was talking to my mother about, and she was a writer too, and she said, hey, that's a great idea. I have these two acronyms, side by side, failure, success. So that became Habit Force. But at the time...
Has your mom done books also?
Yeah, they were a couple of children's books, and she had written a longer biography that never really got published. So yeah, she's done a lot of writing, and she was in Toastmasters, and so she was a real inspiration for me to write as I grew up. So when I made this promise to her, it really had a context of the fact that she was encouraging me for many, many years to be a writer, and to you know, kind of fulfill my dream to be a writer as well. So that was the idea of the book Habit Force, and I did keep that promise, and I'm proud to say I did, and the book was published. It was originally a self-published book, and I don't want to complicate things. It was originally self-published as Habit Force. We'll just leave it there.
Okay.
Make it easier.
Now, I've got a question for you, though, about that book, because that's an interesting thing in terms of healthy alternatives when you're talking about failure versus success.
Yeah.
And so what are some of the examples of that in terms of the mnemonic device that you used for the comparisons between the two areas, kind of the failure traps, I think you call them, and the success
mm-hmm.
tracks?
That's right.
So traps versus tracks.
That's right.
So why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, the failure traps that people get into, and just to back up just a second, to go back to something that Aristotle said, that we are what we repeatedly do. And so Aristotle recognized, and a lot of people have recognized over the centuries, that habits, and I call it habit force, the force of habit, really determine whether you succeed or fail in life. And so I wanted to identify the traps that people get stuck in, these habits that hold people back from achieving their potential, and the habits that keep people from choosing and living healthy alternatives, if we want to bring it right to the topic of the show. So these traps, on the one hand, they're disempowering, and then the success habits are empowering. And so maybe we have time for one or two just as an example. The first one starts with the letter F, obviously failure. And I call that finger pointing. And people will recognize finger pointing, basically making excuses. playing the blame game. If you do that habitually, you're really disempowering yourself. You should be pointing the finger at yourself in order to empower yourself in your own life. And the equal but opposite habit of success starts with the letter S, and that's what I call shoulder responsibility. And so the S, the first letter in success, shoulder responsibility. Take responsibility for your life. And in some cases, like Jack Canfield talks about, take 100% responsibility for your life. And that's a these are not in order of importance, but I would almost argue that the first one, if you don't shoulder responsibility, you're going to be in a lot of trouble in terms of healthy alternatives or making any kind of change in your life.
Yeah, that's good for, to me, is the key for the notion of healthy alternatives is you've got to make the choice to do it. It's there. The research is there now on a lot of the stuff that I share with folks, but it's got to be your decision to commit to do something.
Well, another one that I think is actually really important and relevant, and maybe skip a few letters in the failure traps, I call the U in failure, the U in the word failure, I refer to as undermining yourself. And I think that's an important habit that people might get into. And a lot of these habits, by the way, Jerry, are between the ears. These are habits between the ears, kind of the habits of self-talk that might be disempowering. And when you undermine yourself, you might say, you might start a sentence with, you know, I can't do that, or I tried dieting before, or I tried eating healthy foods and it didn't work. And so you have this internal dialogue where you start out by saying, I can't, or I tried it before and it didn't work. And so you basically undermine yourself. And that's a trap. And people get comfortable. This is the trouble with habits. And it's the wonderful thing about habits. If you get comfortable with habits that hold you back, that's not good. If you get comfortable, it takes no more energy. It doesn't take any more energy to have good habits. If you get comfortable with habits that propel you forward, these tracks I talk about, that's a good thing. So, you know, start to adopt, you know, habits that move you forward. And that's what the book was all about, Habit Force. And we can talk about Make a Promise a little bit, because I think that helps propel you in the right direction as well.
Before we go to Make a Promise, let me ask a question. What kind of feedback you've gotten from some of the folks who have followed talking about in the Habit Force book?
Well, you know, what I've found, and I've talked to various audiences and people have read the book, and they you know, send me emails. They tell me that what happens is just by pointing out the traps, and this is one of the original ideas that I thought it would be really useful to let people see, they have to become aware of the traps. If you don't bring these things up to conscious awareness, people are not aware that they're stuck, and that's where the frustration comes in. People want to change, but they get stuck. So people have commented that simply by pointing out that there are seven traps that you can get stuck in, they become aware of it and they realize, I've got to change. And I'm doing that again. And so these are patterns. And so I found a very good response when people take a look at it, and I get testimonials from people who say, you've changed my life. And, you know, people, it's really, for me, that's gratifying when I hear from people who say, now I'm doing things I was putting that off. I kept procrastinating. And then I finally decided to do it after reading your book.
Great. Now you've got I believe it's in the Habit Force book, something you call six axioms of personal empowerment, kind of like truths, I guess. Can you give us a couple of examples?
Exactly. Yeah. The first one is, we are what we repeatedly do. This is a truism, and people should just accept these things. I mean, these are just take them on face value. These are axioms. We are what we repeatedly do. And once you recognize that, that's recognizing the force of habit or habit force, and that comes straight from Aristotle. So you don't have to take my word for it, Jerry. Aristotle said that. And the second one is that habit force, and this is critical, habit force can either work for you or against you. It's neutral. It's like gravity. It's just there. It's kind of like a software program, and sometimes I refer to my book as the user's guide for your personal operating system, kind of a software. And so you can reprogram your habit force. That's the good news. And that's another axiom. You do have a choice, and you mentioned the word choice. You have a choice. You can reprogram your habit force so it works for you, and that's the third axiom.
Now, at this point, what I want to do is take a break for a moment, point out to you that there's a couple of places you can go to get more information about Matthew Casalotto. One is he's got a website, thepodiumpro.com, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about Make a Promise, and he can also go to makeapromiseday.com. And I want to remind listeners that you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz on webtalkradio.net. And again, we'll be back with Matthew Casalotto in just a moment. What I'd like to talk to you about for a moment is my new book, Switched on Selling, Balance Your Brain for Sales Success. This book recently went to the number one slot bestseller on Amazon in the sales and selling category. It's a book about rewiring your brain, and my co-author is Tony Alessandro, who is a sales guru. He's written 20 books on selling. And I want to read with you a review of this book that was posted on Amazon by Shep Hyken. Shep is the author of The Cult of the Customer, Creating an Amazing Customer Experience that Turns Satisfied Customers into Customer Evangelists. So he wrote about Switched On Selling. I first saw Jerry do a speech on Switched On Technique about 14 years ago at a business conference. I was intrigued. Then I saw him present on how to use this technique to help the mental side of my golf game. It worked amazingly well, and I became one of Jerry's evangelists. Now Jerry combines his concepts with one of my favorite sales and marketing gurus, Tony Alessandro, and comes up with a winning combination. Sales take a certain mindset. This book gets you into that mindset and then gives you strategies on how you can become more successful in sales. I like it. Thanks, Shep, for those comments. And if you would like to order the book, you can go to Amazon and you can go to Barnes & Noble's and order it. So my guest today is Matthew Casalotto, and he is an author and a speaker. He's been a special assistant to Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives. He's been a legislative assistant to congressmen. He's done many, many things in the business arena, speech writing, and he also created Make a Promise Day this year, and is now working on a book called The Power of Making a Promise with a foreword by Jack Canfield, co-author of the best-selling series Chicken Soup for the Soul. So we were talking about habit force. Let's now go to the whole notion of the power of Make a Promise. And how did Make a Promise Day come about in the first place, Matthew?
Well, good question again. I just had this idea. What I wanted to do was to kind of raise the profile of this power of making a promise so that people would hear about it and get it. And so as we were getting close to Mother's Day this year, I thought, well, why don't I just create a day? Just create a day that would be an annual observance. It's really a personal empowerment day or a personal achievement kind of day. You make a promise that you're going to do something and you do it, and it's empowering for people. So it fits right in with my mission to help people reach their potential. So I thought, well, this would be a good time right before Mother's Day to just launch this celebration of the power of making a promise. And that's where we go back to my promise to my mother to dedicate the book to her memory. And I thought, well, okay, we'll do that close to Mother's Day. And so I picked May 4th as the first Make a Promise Day.
Now, in terms of looking at making a promise, one of the things I understand is you're saying that you view promises are much more powerful than goals. Can you talk about that? Because a lot of people talk about goals. They don't normally talk about promises.
Right, and that's where I think we really, I think I've kind of hit on something. I find it extremely powerful, and that is when you make a promise, I refer to a promise as a goal on steroids, because when you make a promise, particularly to someone you care about, as I did with my mother, and sometimes people will make a promise to God or make a promise to themselves, but a promise is much more centered, I believe, in the heart. And it's you create much more of an emotional commitment to following through when you make a promise. And I call these the two magic words, I promise. When you say that, you're not going to guarantee that you're going to follow through, but I'm going to tell you right now, you're going to increase your chances that you're going to follow through. And that's why I recommend that people turn goals into promises. I think of goals as being a little bit more intellectual, a little bit more left brain versus right brain, and there isn't that much of an emotional commitment to the goal. And I think a promise gives you that. And that's why I recommend that people turn not all goals, some goals, into promises.
Now, one of the things I know about goal setting is that you really need to let other people know that you've got this goal, to kind of put yourself out in the sort of public eye that I'm going to do this. Is that the same thing with make a promise and saying I promise? You really need to say it to somebody or some other folks so that you get that commitment? Because I think a lot of people have said, I promise, internally they'll say, I promise to do something, and then they don't do it because they didn't have that extra driving force. Do you think that's an element there as well?
It really is. You really hit on something, and I call it accountability. When you make a promise to someone you care about, all of a sudden you have someone else who's going to hold you accountable. And you know that you're being held accountable when you have someone else involved. And one of the things I recommend when you make a promise is to, first of all, you could write it down, which doesn't necessarily make it public, but you could put it on the internet if you wanted to, or you could make it. I think making it public is very important. So making it public could be just to one person. I often suggest that on your birthday, you could make a, instead of lighting the candles and making a wish and blowing out the candles, you could make a promise, make it public. And I think that the accountability is a key factor. And the second one is that with a promise, your integrity is on the line in a way that with a goal, it's not as much. A goal, you can kind of
wait. Talk a little bit more about that when you say your integrity is on the line.
Well, when you, again, make a promise to someone you care about, when you, by making a promise and you say, I promise, you're really putting your integrity on your skin. You're putting skin in the game now, because that's the nature of a promise. A promise says that you're going to do what you say you're going to do. A goal, you can amend a goal. You can only break a promise. That's what I find really powerful about a promise. You're really putting yourself out there, and your integrity is on the line with a promise in a way. With a goal, people say, well, or New Year's resolution, or even an objective. There are a lot of things that people can use different words. I think the promise is the more binding of all of them because of these two factors, that your integrity is on the line and you have accountability.
Can you give us some examples of where you've seen in people who are in the public eye where making a promise made a difference to what they did?
Well, there are some amazing examples, and that's one of the things that I'm pulling together for this new book, The Power of Making a Promise. I mean, one example, in fact, I just came across it. I remember reading about it a few years ago. You might remember it, Jerry. A woman out in Oakland, California, went into a classroom of 23 third graders. She looked at these third graders. It was a rough neighborhood. It was an inner city school. And she said she made a promise, and it was kind of spur of the moment. She made a promise that if they stay in school and graduate from high school, she will pay for them to go to college. And she was not a woman of means. And so she wrote a book called The Promise in 2005. And it was a pretty amazing story about, the power of making a promise. She's kind of laid it right on the line with this, and it made it public. And so it changed her life and the lives of the kids.
If I recollect, I think all the kids actually went to college. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, and she started a foundation, and her last name was Brown, and I'm trying to remember the first name. I don't have it written on my mind here, but there's a foundation. Yeah, the kids went to college, and now there are more kids. Now, that was just, she just started with the 23. But what's amazing is once you make that promise, then the world changes. Then you start to figure out ways to pay for it. So she started to raise funds. So again, her life changed, and the lives of those kids changed. And now it's even more. You know, it's like I think hundreds kids have benefited from that original promise. Yeah, another example is Oprah. Oprah Winfrey made a promise to Nelson Mandela. This is back, I think, in 2001, that she was going to build the school for girls in South Africa. She made a promise, and she stuck to it. But were it not for that promise, you know, maybe she would have thought of, well, I don't want to spend the money or whatever. But she made a promise, and she told the media, I made a promise to Mandiba, his nickname is, and I intend to keep it. That's the idea. You make a promise, and then you usually say, I intend to keep it afterwards. That's what the power of making a promise is all about.
So we've been listening to my guest, Matthew Casalotto, talking about commitment for yourself. And to me, in terms of healthy alternative, that's going to be the key element for you. And Matthew, I want to thank you for being a guest on the show. And if you'd like more information about Matthew from his speaker standpoint, you can go to thepodiumpro.com. And if you do want to know more about the Make a Promise Day, it's real simple. Go to makeapromiseday.com. So healthy alternatives are going to be up to you to make your decision as to the direction you want to go. Matthew, thank you for being my guest. Next week, I'm going to be talking to Dale Anderson. He's a doctor, and he's been a board-certified surgeon, emergency room physician, and he also was one of the founders of the American Board of Holistic Medicine. Dale has gone into looking at how we can use acting as a way for us to reach our healthy alternatives. So we're going to be talking to him about acting and setting the stage for creating a healthy, successful performance in your life. You don't want to miss this show. I look forward to your tuning in next week. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and you can find out more about me at teplitz.com or follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.